the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, hey, welcome back. It's another edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. This is your source for the best in money advice every day, if I do say so myself. The Brain Trust is standing by. Brain Trust is ready to talk with you. We've got Professor Rick Plum here with me, Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. We're going to be talking first up this hour about asset location. Asset location. You've heard it. You've heard of asset allocation, and we've talked about this before on this program. Asset allocation, but this is asset location. The two go hand in hand in many ways. You can have one without the other, but missing one without the other can cause some problems for you. So we are going to talk about that coming up with Professor Plum. We'll tell you what it is. We'll tell you how taxation affects it and all that stuff. So stick around. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We do have room on the phones right now at the top of the show. So join us on the phones if you need to ask a question. If you want to send us an email, the email address, wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link right there at the top of the page. I mentioned Professor Rick Plum. He's joining me here once again from Lucia Capital Group. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you want to talk to an advisor about your money, and I would suggest that you do so. You can talk to the folks at Lucia Capital Group at 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. The Brain Trust advisors are standing by. They're there to help you out. Okay, I mentioned this. Professor Plum, certified financial planner here with me, Johnny Dean. We do have lines open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Asset location. Okay, it sounds too close to asset allocation, but it's not. It's not the same thing. It means something different, right, Professor Plum?
Well, to me, it means something different. I mean, and the question is, once you've created your asset allocation, how much you put in stocks, bonds, cash, whatever asset class that you're dealing with, whether it be throwing in alternatives or some of the other ones, once you've identified the types of investments that you want and how much, either in dollar amounts or percentages that you want, how do you go about figuring out what accounts you should be putting those assets? Should I be buying them in my Roth IRA, my traditional IRA, my 401k? Should I be buying them in my personal name? How do I go about figuring out what I should be doing from where I buy them, where I locate my assets? Asset allocation is determining which types of assets. Asset location is determining which types of accounts to use for the assets that I have identified that I need in my plan, my strategy.
Okay, so let's explain what this is, because that's a little wonky right there.
That's wonky. That's an interesting term. Okay.
Well. Okay. You know, because obviously they're closely related, but at the same time they're not.
So what's the difference? Why would you care whether you owned your stocks in your IRA, your Roth IRA, your personal account, or your bonds in such a thing, or your real estate and all these other types of assets? Why does it matter whether I buy them in my 401k or my personal account? Well, why it matters is taxation. Taxation is one of those things. People talk about fees and the problem of paying fees and the how much you lose of your overall return because you're paying fees. Well, taxes are a sort of a kind of a fee that you have to pay along the way if you own it personally. How much drag is on your return because you're continually paying taxes on the return that you're receiving? And now, we don't see it too much with interest rates right now because we don't see much of interest rates right now. But when we have stocks, when we have growth assets, you know, mutual funds that grow, we saw this a lot towards the end of last year where the market was pretty flat for the year, and yet a lot of people got some large distributions, and they had to pay taxes on investments that they basically, if they'd bought them any time during the year, they may not have made any money, but they had to pay taxes on it. Now that takes away money from other sources, and so understanding how the money's going to be taxed has a lot to do with how you go about purchasing, where you should be looking to purchase it. Now, obviously, if 100% of your money is invested in a Roth IRA, you don't have to worry about taxes. But it's unusual for somebody to be 100% in only one type of account. And the reality is, should it all be in a Roth IRA, to be able to accumulate large Roth IRAs, you had to either pay a lot of taxes on conversions or you had to have enough money to contribute either through Roth 401ks or other things, and it may have actually been better for you while you were working to contribute to a deductible traditional IRA or a deductible 401k. So most people have some assortment of assets. I should say some assortment of accounts. Some personal money, some IRA money, some Roth money. So when I say IRA, I'm going to kind of use that inclusive of all tax-deferred accounts, 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, those types of accounts.
You're going to call that what, IRA money?
Just call it IRAs. Yeah, you know, call it, or tax-deferred accounts, money that
just
I
say
get
IRA
a deduction
money.
For up front, and I'll have to pay taxes on in the end.
Right.
So how do you go about deciding which assets to put where? Well, it's not as easy as always do this or always do that, because it changes depending upon where you are in your financial life. For a lot of people, ideally, if you could figure out a way, but even this doesn't hold true all the time. The old story was put your stocks in your personal account, because we have a preferential tax treatment on stocks and qualified dividends, and put your interest-bearing accounts in your IRAs, because interest is taxed as ordinary income, and distributions from IRAs are taxed as ordinary income. But in today's world, you're not earning anything on interest rates. And so deferring an interest rate doesn't really save you anything in the short run, doesn't really save you anything in the long run for right now, because you're not earning anything on it. And so while you're accumulating assets, in many respects, you expect, and even though we don't have the same expectations as 15, 20 years ago, we still expect to earn over time 7, 8, 9, 10% or so in a growth-oriented investment. And so that ongoing growth, avoiding the tax on that right now, even though it's a lesser tax bracket than ordinary income, is more beneficial than avoiding the tax on a 0.05% interest rate, because it's just not that much right now. There's just not that much of a dollar drag on that interest rate, because there's not that much in interest in the first place.
And that almost goes against a little bit what we had said, back several
years ago
when interest rates were a lot higher.
Well, interest rates are 5, 6, 7%, and you have to pay, and maybe you're in the 25% federal income tax, and you're in a state like California or Oregon or one of the others where you pay 8, 9%, call it just 10% for easy math, on that. So you're losing a third of your return. So my I have to pay 1.3, 1.4% in taxes. And where on a stock portfolio, it doesn't create an immediate taxation on 100% of the money. Maybe you have a 10% overall return, purely hypothetical, but only half of it is what they call realized. So I pay 15% on 5% return. So my dollars of expense are a lot less when interest rates are a lot higher by doing but right now, especially since most of us are going to accumulate money in our 401ks anyway, it makes sense to actually have the growth portfolio in the 401k, growth portfolio in the IRAs, and defer that tax because it's a bigger dollar amount than the tax on the interest rates right now. Interest rates are just so low that you're not really saving anything. So while you're accumulating assets, and this actually lends itself into a different area where it used to be a conflict, because we wanted to have our interest-bearing accounts in our IRAs, but we still needed to have an emergency fund, which has to be outside the IRAs. So in the accumulation phase, this now, have your emergency fund outside because you're not earning anything on it anyway. So everything's coming together. It works really well in the large picture.
877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. If you've got some money questions of any kind, you give us a call. We got lines open, Brain Trust, ready to talk to you, 877-752-6637. Now, we said before on this show many, many times that the conventional wisdom of defer really isn't...
doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't always work. But we should say again, because our answer being always, it depends. There are times when, as you said, it actually does make sense.
Right, and so now, before we even get to the asset locations decision, we have to determine whether or not we're going to use a traditional IRA. A friend of mine called me last night. His son started a new job, and he's got the option of a 401k or a Roth 401k. Which one should he take? We know what his allocation is going to be. He's 26 years old. His allocation is going to be growth. This is retirement money in either case. But should he be doing a Roth or traditional? And these are kinds of questions that come into, they all have different timings. Should I be using growth? Sure, that answer is done. That's easy.
Yeah.
Should I use Roth or traditional? But then when we get older and we've built up a nest egg and we actually have the choice of having some safe money, some growth money, some income money, some other things, and we have IRA, 401k, Roth IRA, and maybe some personal money. Where should we put those? And they change as time goes on. Where it may be appropriate one way when you're 35, 45, it may be totally different when you're 65, 75.
I would think it would, because one of the determining factors, once again, is, are you in the accumulation phase where you're building your nest egg and you're using volatility to your advantage and all that stuff, or you're in your decumulation phase?
And now you're also worried about some things like required minimum distributions and other areas.
Yeah, and if you're not, when he says worried about it, it means it's on your mind, you're thinking about it. And if you haven't thought about that, as you approach retirement, then you may want to consider doing so, because you're going to have those coming up at age 70 and a half. Now, we got more to talk about, but anything that's on your mind, I said the phone lines are open. 877-PLANNER, as usual, the Brain Trust standing by, ready to take your calls. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, we're here answering your money questions every day on Bucket Strategy Investing. We're coming right back. All right, time to get the trucks out. What do you say, huh? Pull the horn.
That's such a great...
That movie's going to be 40 years old, next year, I think.
Yeah, 77.
Smokey and the Bandit. Yeah.
Great movie.
Great movie.
So
stupid
much
as heck.
Fun. Oh, God, it
had
was just
Had no
fun.
Chance of winning any awards whatsoever.
And I don't think they cared.
No, of course they didn't care.
They were just having fun.
Don't you just check your brain at the door and watch that?
You know, people watching it now are like, bootlegging Coors beer? What is that all about? Coors, you can get it anywhere.
Exactly.
Not back then.
No, you could not. No, you could not. Anyway, just it's fun. So we enjoy that song. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Got some folks on hold. We're going to take care of the calls right now. You can add to the list, though, of callers. We still have a line open at that aforementioned number, 877-PLANNER. Let's go to Paul up next in San Jose, California. Oh, Sharon? Oh, excuse me. All right. Well, hold on, Paul. We'll get to Sharon then in Fort Pierce, Florida up next. Hello, Sharon.
Hello.
How can we help you today?
Okay, here's my question. I am still working, and I will be 65 at the end of the year, so I was thinking of retiring. And my husband is in his 70s and already receiving Social Security benefits. My question is, can I draw on his benefits and then wait on mine till I'm 70?
You'll be 65 in December of this year, 16?
Yes.
Well, you cannot do what you want to do until December of 17. If you wanted to wait until December of 2017, when you turn 66,
okay,
you will be able to do what they call a restricted application, applying for only the spousal benefit without applying for your own benefit. And because you haven't applied for your own benefit, it can continue to grow until you're 70 years of age. You go back in and start your age 70 benefit. Now, will your age 70 benefit be larger than your husband's benefit?
Yes.
Okay. And if you think you have some longevity on your side, then that makes a lot of sense to do it that way. But you won't be able to receive a benefit when you retire at the end of this year or retire this year until you turn 66.
Okay. And how about Medicare?
Medicare you apply for in December, or a couple months ahead of December this year, because you apply for Medicare by itself in this case. You're not going to be applying for your benefit at this time. You're only applying for Medicare.
Okay. All right, so you're going to make me work till I'm 66.
I'm not going to make you do anything, but, and I'm not saying you have to work until 66. I'm saying that if you want to take only the spousal benefit without applying for your own benefit first, you have to wait until 66. Now, you're going to be getting half of his benefit or very close to that number. And so is that not enough to retire on it, you know, at 65?
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, I'm just
so
trying to think.
I'm not telling you to work until 66.
Oh, sure you are, Plum. Come on, be honest. You just told her 66.
I'm saying she can't get a benefit until 66.
Right, yeah. Right. Full retirement age.
And so you would go without a little bit of money for a year. And then you'd pick up some money for 4 years and then a lot more money for the rest of your life.
So that makes sense to you?
If you live a long enough time, it does.
Right. How long does Sharon have to live for this?
81-ish. 82.
What do you think, Sharon?
Well, my dad went to 90, so there's hope.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. I so appreciate the help.
You're
no
very
problem.
Welcome. Thank you for the call. Okay, so explain for those who are tuning in what she wants to do.
Well, what she wants to do is something known as a restricted application. And because she was 62, at least, or even a little bit older, than 62 by the end of 2015, she still has this option available. Anybody who is not 62 at the end of 2015 does not have this option available to them. She has the availability, the ability, because her husband has already applied for a benefit. He's already receiving his benefit. When she gets to full retirement age, assuming she hasn't applied for anything, she can apply for only the spousal retirement benefit. She does not have to apply for her own. She can choose which one to apply for. And in her case, she's going to choose to take just the spousal retirement benefit. So it's going to be roughly half of what her husband is receiving. She'll get that for up to 4 years until she turns 70. And then at age 70, she'll go back in and she will apply for her own benefit. Her own benefit will be increasing, because she's never applied for it, be increasing at about 8% for every year that she waits. It actually goes up on a monthly basis by a little bit, the equivalent of 8% a year roughly. And so by the time she gets to 70, her benefit will be pretty good. It'll be at 130-140% of what it is today. And so that's going to help her out a lot, because that number will continue. Her husband's older. It's expected at some point she'll survive him, and this will give her the best survivor income going forward. Now, one of the reasons I asked whether his benefit was larger than what her benefit will become, if his benefit was larger than what her benefit will become, then it doesn't make sense for her to wait. Because when he passes away, she would have stepped up to his higher benefit anyway. And given the head start that he's got, he's several years older than her, it's unlikely that her benefit would continue up until her age 81, 82, 83.
Her own benefit.
Because her benefit's going to stop if, given the other situation.
Yes.
But because her benefit's going to grow and become the largest of the two, that becomes the better survivor benefit. And heaven forbid something happened to her at an early age, 71, 72, 73. Her husband would step up to the higher number going forward from that point.
Yeah, it's about longevity when we talk about Social Security, but it's really in many ways about the longevity, not just of the person, but of the benefit. If you have a married couple, how long will that benefit continue? Married couple, obviously.
Right. And so, or an ex-married couple for at least 10 years.
Well, okay, that's true. Yeah. Making sure all those rules are in place.
But all these things come into play when you're dealing with things. Now, the other side of it is she won't pay quite as much in taxes for the next 4 years. So they may have some room to do a little Roth conversions between 65
and
70. And 70. And so they could get money from a traditional IRA at a lower bracket over to a Roth IRA. And that money would be the money that would be spent way down the line when there's a surviving spouse. And the tax brackets change for a surviving spouse.
And what would be the reason for doing that?
Well, when somebody passes away, right now a married couple can have, especially a married couple 65 years of age or older, even without itemized deductions, can have about $100,000 of gross income and stay in the 15% ordinary income tax bracket. Whereas a single individual can only have about $50,000. So if their goal is, you know, maybe they've got a goal of $80,000-$90,000 while they're alive, but it's still going to be $60,000 or $70,000 when there's a surviving spouse, that means a lot of that income could be in the 25% bracket for the survivor. So when there's a survivor situation, we've lost one of the Social Securities, which means we have more of a reliance on the portfolio. We have a higher tax bracket, which means we have higher expenses. Taxes are an expense. So we have less income and more expenses. That's not a good situation. By converting in the lower tax bracket, we have more money in Roth IRA that we can rely on to help reduce the taxes, reduce that expense in retirement. So yes, we're going to still lose one of the incomes, but we potentially will be able to reduce some of the expenses, taxes, at that point as well.
Yes, and you'll be reducing them down the line. You're not doing this necessarily for today.
You're actually increasing them today.
You're increasing them for today, but you're doing this so that you don't have this tax bill really for the rest of your life.
Right. So if I can convert $20,000-$30,000 a year this year in the 15% bracket and avoid paying $20,000-$30,000 of income in the 25% tax bracket later, that's a nice little arbitrage. So I can work it in my favor.
Yeah, and that's the whole idea, which is why it's helpful to have somebody who can help you plan these things out. Looking ahead, that's right. I mentioned required minimum distributions, Professor Plum did earlier, and why you should be thinking about these things well ahead of the actual 70 and a half date. Okay, lots more to come. Paul, if you're still listening, give us a call back. We will talk to you about your asset allocation on a Roth. We have more to say about asset location, too, so we'll be talking about that and anything else that you want to bring up. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're here for you every day on the radio, on television, and the internet, and anywhere else you happen to be pirating our show, which is absolutely fine with me. I don't care. You can join us every day at this time. You can also join us in person at the workshops. And by us, I'm really referring to Professor Rick Plum and Terry Keyes and the local advisors. Yeah, you never know. I may show up one time. You never know. I used to, and I said that, and I may do it again. If I can, you know, get a hall pass, as we say.
Kitchen pass.
That's
yeah.
Right. Yes. From the.
If you get all your chores done at home.
Which generally I haven't by Saturday morning. No. It just doesn't happen. Anyway, you can join the Brain Trust on the following Saturdays. It's going to be in February. The first one is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Las Vegas, Nevada, Saturday, February 20th. These are the Retirement Income Strategies Workshops brought to you by Lucia Capital Group for 2016. That's right. The fall. I've been saying that so long. The spring schedule is in swing. In the spring, February 20th, Las Vegas, Saturday, February 28th, that'll be 27th, Seattle, Washington, and Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday, March 12th. So there are a few Saturdays there, and there will be more after that. If you check wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, you can sign up there. They're all free, and just sign up and get your money questions answered. It's a really, really easy thing. Plus, you get to meet the Brain Trust. What could be better than that? All right, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We got some room on the phones, 877-752-6637. Denise is calling from somewhere. I don't know. Hello, Denise.
Hi, how are you, John?
Oh, well, I'm fine, Denise. Thank you.
Hello, Rick.
Good morning.
Wow.
Good morning. I just wanted to wish John a happy, happy birthday today.
Oh,
and many more.
Yes.
And enjoy your day.
Oh.
John got
the group. Family.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Denise, this is the Denise from Lucia Capital Group.
It is, and she's reminding us that John got old today. And happy birthday, happy old man day for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Happy birthday, John.
Thank you, Denise. I appreciate you taking the time to call. All right, that's very nice of you. Thank you so much. She actually stopped by earlier.
And your gift will be in the mail, like always. Of course, we've been waiting on that mail for a long time for your gifts.
Well, you know, it happens. I'm one day older, that's all it is, right? That's what I keep telling myself. Although now my wife and I are the same age.
For a little while.
Yeah. I have for about 3 months to tease her that she's older than I am, because her birthday's in October,
uh-huh.
And so until you know,
so you're
now
the same
we're now
age.
We're the same age. That's the way it is. So, well, there you go. Thank you. I appreciate that, Denise. 877-PLANNER.
So that Social Security discussion we were having earlier is becoming more important to you as you get closer to that age.
You know what happened? It was the magical age of 50 for me when I really said, wait a minute now, I don't have a 4 in front of my. You know, at the end of this decade, I said when I was 50, at the end of this decade, I can actually take money out of my IRAs and my 401ks without any penalty.
Yeah, I hit that number this last year, and it was like, well, I don't want to quit. I hope they don't make me quit. But if I had to, at least I have access to some money without a penalty.
Yes,
but
you have the 55. That's right.
The 55,
yes. Yes, you hit the 55, which means you can have access to you know, your current employer's.
My 401ks, yeah.
401k, which, you know, hey, if you have to, you have to. But there you go. All right. So what were? Oh, right. Asset location. Now, what you mentioned this earlier, the difference between the two. So let's just go over some of the basic rules. How do you know when something needs to go either into a Roth IRA or you should have it into a traditional IRA? Is taxation the main focus or not?
In those respects, yes. When you're contributing to 401ks, Roth IRAs, things of that nature, the ability to either get a tax deduction or not has a lot to do with what you're dealing with. For a lot of people, they want to save, but they've been doing their 401k and they want to open an IRA, but because they're in a 401k, they cannot get the deduction on a traditional IRA, and so obviously the Roth IRA is going to be a better deal. Tax-free is really good, especially if you can leave the money alone. Now, tax-free on a Roth IRA isn't necessarily the greatest thing in the world if you have to get to the money prior to when you know, 59 and a half or one of the other exemptions. But at least with a Roth IRA, you can pull your own principal back out. You can't get to the earnings until that point. So the reality is a Roth IRA, if you cannot get the deduction on the traditional IRA anyway, is a great way to go. The question then becomes, though, if I have the ability to make a deductible contribution to a traditional IRA, or as my friend and I were talking about last night for his son, a Roth contribution to a Roth 401k, which one makes more sense? Now, the match is going to be the same either way. So should he be doing Roth or should he be doing traditional? And that has to do with tax brackets now and tax brackets in the future. Now, for this particular individual, he does not have to worry about purchasing a home. He's already done that. So we're not worried about the first-time home purchase credit. So that's not a reason to push us one way or the other. So now we're going to really focus on what is this tax bracket today and what might it look like? Unfortunately, it's a very difficult situation. What might it look like 40 years from now? That's an almost impossibility. And if he's in way into the 25% tax bracket, then I would suggest starting with the tax deductible, save the money today, 401k. He's starting off. He doesn't have a large portfolio yet. But it also, we have to look at several things. So I might even, with somebody in their young 20s who's not looking to buy a house, who's looking for retirement savings, splitting it and going some tax deductible, some Roth. So that he has the ability to bring up both pools of money. Now, it just happened that the individual in question was a little ways into the 25, but not
25% tax bracket.
Yeah. But the amount of money he was able or wants to be able to save would bring it down below the 15% threshold. So some of the money would be contributed on the 15% bracket. Some of it would be contributed at the 25. So we're going to split his contribution just because we're going to put enough in it to bring him out of the 25% bracket. And then the rest of it's going to go to the Roth while it's in the 15%
bracket. So what you're saying is the reason it goes down from the 25 to the 15 is because he's contributing,
he's lowering
his overall income by making the actual contribution.
Right. For somebody his age, he can have about $45,000 of gross income. He's at 55 right now. He wants to put in $15,000 a year because he's young and he's got very few expenses. He wants to. So we're going to put 10 in to bring him out of the 25% bracket. The other five is going to go into
the Roth.
Into the Roth.
And that's the sort of 50-50.
That wasn't exactly 50.
No, but some in one side and some in the other side.
But now he'll be able to build up both sides of the money. The other thing to look at, especially for younger people, is how long are you going to be with this current employer? Because access to a 401k is limited. Yes, you may be able to borrow some money from it, but borrowing it isn't always the best idea. But if you're going to be, if this is a job that you want to be at for a long time, then you've got to consider the access to the money basically off the table. On the other side, if you think that this is a starter job, you're only going to be there for 3, 4, 5, 6 years maybe, then having access to the money and rolling it to an IRA gives you access to the money, especially if it's a Roth IRA, because now you've got a contribution base that you can actually pull out to help with kids' education and things of that nature somewhere down the line. So we're looking at a lot of different angles on what we should be dealing with. The one thing we don't have to deal with somebody in their 25, 26, 27-year age group is what the assets are supposed to be, the allocation. The allocation is growth, because this is long-term money by its very definition. He's going to be putting it aside, hopefully, for 40 years. That means put it all for growth, let it go, you know, whether it's a stock investment, a mutual fund, a stock mutual fund investment, an ETF, exchange-traded fund, or something that has growth orientation around it, that's decided already. Now what we need to do is the location. Where should we put it? And that has to do with the tax brackets.
Yeah, so now you also said before, tax brackets are an important part, and you kind of covered this before, but where you are in life, mm-hmm. I mean...
We were talking about that a little bit.
Yes, and you sort of alluded to it right here.
You know, and it depends on what you're saving the money for. This is in a retirement account, so we were saving it for long term. But let's say that he has extra money, and he wants to build up a pool of money in the next 5, 6, 8 years to buy a vacation house. He wants to buy a new car, truck, whatever the case may be, or he's got a shorter term goal in mind. Now we can talk about the asset allocation. Does he want to be aggressive with it, or does he want to be conservative with it? But by its very nature, regardless of what the investment is, it should be personal money because he wants access to it at a very early age, well before 59 and a half, well before we can get the money or count on getting the money out of the 401k. Mm-hmm. And so that dictates the location. So the location's known, it's going to be a personal account. Now it's just a matter of identifying what type of investment. Before the investment was known, the location wasn't. In that respect, if we've got a short-term need well before 59 and a half, the location is known, now we have to decide on
the
investment.
You have to decide on the allocation, in other words, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to imagine if you have location and you have asset allocation, but you know, one, you can't have asset location without having the asset allocation already in place, right? Well, I guess you could, though. You kind of said you could right here.
Yeah, they're independent of each other, and both have a very important potential outcome, you know, different outcome. The wrong investment can really screw up your goal. The wrong asset location can really cost you money, which can screw up your goal. So getting them both right is very important. And they're not so interrelated that it's always this if you do this or always that if you do this. They have different times and different places for different needs. So making sure that you get both sides of the equation, investment decision and location decision, mm-hmm. has a long way in going in helping you reach the goal in a more efficient manner.
And I think the way you do that is to have an advisor at least go over your portfolio and say, here's where it is. You're not really tax efficient here, or you are tax efficient here. Let's think about your goals. There are just so many factors in place. All right, hang on. We're going to take a break. We're going to get back to your phone calls. Let's see. Greg, we're going to put you next in St. Paul, and we have a couple of others after that. Still two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing. Dancing the hour away, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls this hour and next hour. Another hour is just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing. So if you got any questions, you can ask them now or save them for another hour, which is fine. We got a couple of calls to get to here before the top of the hour and some emails. Be getting some emails here during the show as well. We'll answer just as many as we can in the limited time that we have here with you today. 877-PLANNER, Johnny Dean and Professor Rick Plum. Let's get back to the phone lines. Let's go to Greg in St. Paul up next with a question or two. Hello, Greg.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah,
I have a question for you.
Yes.
I've been hearing this commercial about new changes to Social Security if you make over 250, or if you have over 250,000 in savings. You could be leaving tens of thousands on the table, sort of thing. What changes are they talking about, or is this a scam?
Well, it's a scare tactic, and the $250,000 number is a hypothetical, made-up, doesn't matter number. And they may be using it saying, well, you need that kind of money to be able to live while you're deferring taking a benefit. There were some changes to the Social Security rules as of November of last year, and it took away some very popular options, one of them being the file and suspend option to allow somebody else to take a benefit from your work record while you were waiting until age 70. The other was the restricted application, where you were allowed at full retirement age to take a benefit from somebody else, your spouse, as a spousal benefit without applying for your own. And by taking away these benefits, it restricted our ability to receive maybe as much as, you know, $50,000-$60,000 worth of money that we would otherwise not have been able to get. Now, if you are not the right age, you don't have those options available to you. The 250 number is a hocus pocus number, just made to sound, make it sound really interesting.
Okay, yeah, because it's so confusing. Because usually it's, well, you know, one spouse takes.
Tell me about you.
What the other is? Pardon?
Tell me about you. How old are you?
I'm 53.
And your spouse?
60.
60. So there's 7 years 60. Difference in age.
Correct.
So the reality is that, and because both of you are under 62, you don't have the option of doing a restricted application when you get to full retirement age, 67 for you. You don't have the option of doing the file and suspend option. So they've taken that away for you. They've taken it away for John and I and most people out there that are not currently on Social Security. So you've just got less decision-making process to go through when you get out to Social Security age.
Okay. Yep. All right, so would it benefit us? We're basically a wash, I think, income-wise. So would it benefit us to have her wait till 67, and then I would take half of mine, or the other way around?
Well, half
depends on what I make in the future. Or?
Well, this is what you're not going to be. How much is your benefit projected to be?
Oh,
give or take.
I think it's like $1,200.
Right, and what now is her benefit projected to be?
Approximately the same.
Okay. The reality is we're going to be looking at, is somebody continuing to work? She's 7 years your senior, so when you're 63, she'll be 70. If you're still working from 55 to 63 it may make sense for her to defer taking her own benefit. Let that $1,200 grow into $1,600, $1,700, or even higher than that, so that that becomes the continuation benefit for whoever lives the longest. And then when you turn 63, you go ahead and, if you're retired, you go ahead and take it at that point. A lot of this has to do with longevity and other areas, but it's probably going to make sense, especially if you're still working until 63, for her to defer taking her benefit until 70. You're not going to be able to take a benefit from her work record while she's alive. No spousal benefits will be paid to you. No spousal benefits will be paid to her. And so there's no gamesmanship here. Now it's just a matter of what are the best times to take it. And given the fact that you've got about the same number, but she's got a 7-year head start, and if we have longevity for either one of you, I would consider waiting on hers until 70 and taking yours as early as you can when you retire.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
All right. That's what I need to know.
All right, Greg.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you have any other questions, please hold on. We'll be happy to talk to you more about this off the air. Don't listen to scare tactics.
Where they're getting the $250,000 number from.
You know, and I know a couple of websites that are actually decent websites, but they have these things. You're leaving $50,000 on the table. Yeah, you're leaving $60,000. You're leaving $10,000. They had to change it.
Well, and it was as much as $62,000, $63,000.
Well, and that's where that came from.
And that was where I've seen it where two high-wage individuals, specifically I was talking to one doctor, one lawyer, where they were both waiting until age 70. They were very similar in age. They were both waiting until 70 to take their benefit, and neither one of them had applied for and suspended and or taken a spousal benefit.
And they left.
They were leaving $1,300 a month on the table that they weren't going to get if they waited until 70.
4 years of payments. All right, 877-PLANNER. We're going to get to Pete in Malaga, California. Hello, Pete. How can we help you today?
Oh, good morning. I have a question about – I have a term life insurance policy for – $500,000. I'm 75, no dependents. I took out the policy as when I retired so I could get my full retirement pension, and then the company I worked for went bankrupt, so the whole thing was kind of a fiasco. But now I'm paying $2,200 a month or a year for this $500,000 policy. I'd like some insight as to whether you guys think I should keep it or not.
Are you still married, or unfortunately, are you a widow now?
Yes.
You're a widow?
Yes.
Okay, so the reason for buying the insurance is no longer there.
That's correct. But it's so cheap. I mean, $2,200 a year for $500,000.
Right. Now, it was a term policy.
Right, 5 more years to go.
So 5 more years. You sound like there's a very high likelihood that you'll make it the next 5 years.
Yes.
So, I mean, if... The only way that this makes sense to keep is if, unfortunately, you die within the next 5 years.
Right.
Because otherwise, you're paying $2,200 a year, and you're going to get absolutely nothing from it.
Right. But I don't really need the money. So.
And so if you were to maintain this insurance and you accidentally lived for 5 years, you got nothing. You spent, you know, $11,000 or whatever it is. If you drop it, you save the $11,000, but God forbid you died in the next 5 years, there's nobody financially dependent on you, and it doesn't affect anybody's life. Sure, it would have made somebody a lot happier to get $500,000 from Uncle Pete, but it's not going to kill them if they don't get it, right?
That's correct.
Personally, I'd drop it, but that's just me. Now, you are tempting fate by dropping it, but, you know, that's the way it goes, right?
Well, that's like all the people that are buying the Powerball tickets, right?
Yeah. You can buy 2,200 Powerball tickets today.
Yeah, like that's going to matter. Hey, listen, Pete, I got to take a break. Please, if you have any other questions, hold on a second. We will talk to you during the top of the hour in about 1 minute. So if you have questions, don't go away. We just got to take a break here. If you need the Brain Trust, you want to talk to any of the Brain Trust advisors like Professor Plum, off the air, the number over at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Talk to an advisor about your strategy, about your bucket strategy. Another hour is just ahead. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented,
said the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.